obviously these figures are of great concern. The incidence of alcohol and drug abuse among young people has long been a problem, and we need to ensure that we have more focused and more joined up services that are able to intervene and support those people, and support them in the context of their families, because one of the elements of the discussion that hasn't come out in the part of the programme that I've heard is to support parents in particular when we're talking about children under the age of 11. There's a mother or father that ought to be engaged there, and if they're not properly engaged, then that's of course an issue for the children's services of the children's support services.
What's the link between children and teenagers drinking and cheap alcohol?
Well, clearly, if it's the cheaper it is, the easier it is to get hold of it. But none of these people, by definition, none of these people should be able to buy the alcoholic products at all.
No, but they ask older siblings to do it, don't they?
Well, indeed. And so then it becomes the link with price. There's no point in denying that there's an issue about price. I accept that the more expensive the product is, the more difficult it is for young people to get hold of it. But I think there's a danger in over-focusing on price. I think it's also about people selling alcohol to underage groups of teenagers. I think it's about engaging with families and the full range of statutory services. In order to pick up one of the points one of your contributors made, alcohol is a drug, and it's a particularly damaging drug for people in their early teens.
Let me bring in Joey. Good morning to you. Tell us what led to you trying alcohol at such a young age, age 12.
Well, when I was sort of 12, 13, I was hanging around with boys that were a lot older and they were all drinking, and it was just very much the norm in the town that I lived in, something that you did sort of in the park or in garages. It was just the accepted way of having fun.
Mm. And had you had any conversations with your parents about alcohol, or had you had any messages from them about booze?
Yeah, my parents are both very sensible with alcohol. They, you know, one glass of wine a night, and they did talk to me, and they couldn't understand because they could obviously see sometimes I was very hungover, although I always tried to stay at my friends' houses after. But at the end of the day, it's very difficult for anyone to stop young people, you know, experimenting. And I think to a certain extent, they hoped it was going to be a phase, and that it would sort of phase out of its own accord.
So if it's very difficult for parents to stop or intervene because teenagers do this, it's considered by some to be a rite of passage, you end up staying at your friend's house so they don't see you drunk anyway, mm-hmm. what could be done to reduce access to alcohol?
In terms of access, I think it really is, for me, in my opinion, it's less about the externals. It's about talking to young people on a level and asking the questions, which is something that I didn't do when I was young. I never thought about, why do I need alcohol to have fun? Am I not confident enough with just maybe one drink, or when you're 12, no drinks? Mm. And I think they're the questions that we need to start asking from a younger age, you know, bringing it into schools. I do a lot of work going into schools, and as a young person, speaking to young people, talking about my experiences, they do listen, and a lot of them will come up at the end and say, that's really made a difference, you know?
Is there a link in your mind, as Stephen Dorrell accepts, between the price of alcohol, the fact that it can be pretty cheap sometimes, and children and teenagers drinking?
I think there probably is a link, but I've got to be honest and say, I think it depends on kind of from what walk of life you're from. I was from quite a well-to-do background. I went to a good school. I had a part-time job from an early age, so money was never an issue for me. And, you know, often I didn't buy the alcohol. I've actually set up a company called AddictiveDaughter.com, and it's very much sort of for my demographic of women in sort of late teens and 20s. And it's often not spoken about very much. We all be very quiet about our drinking. But there's a big problem for, you know, no matter what walk of life you're from, it's an issue. And I think pricing is, it might affect a certain, you know, a certain area and a certain type of person, but it isn't for everyone. I don't think that's the solution.
Mm. Stephen Dorrell, what has the coalition government done to try to reduce drinking in underage drinkers and indeed adults?
Well, one of the key things that has happened in the last few years under the coalition has been the development of Public Health England and the strengthening of the voice of public health in the evolution of health policy, both nationally and locally. And its engagement with local doctors, local health services, but importantly, the wider community with the education service, with the youth service, because it's picking up the point that was made. The great danger with all young people, we all know this as parents, is lecturing, laying down the law. It's a process of persuasion. It isn't a process of tell.
And that's enough, as far as you're concerned?
Well, I think it's by far the most important thing we can do is to identify problems as they emerge and intervene with individual cases to provide support. That's by far the most effective thing that can be done.
If you clamp down on advertising or banned multi-buy promotions or raised the minimum price of alcohol, wouldn't that have a good effect too?
In the political class, there's a deep belief that somehow there's some magic lever that's located in the Palace of Westminster, that all we've got to do is put it in the right place and this problem will go away. It is complete rubbish. What we need to do is to change behaviours, to change understanding, and that can only be done by connecting with people, by making the case that alcohol abuse is dangerous to them as well as to the rest of us. Mm.
I wonder if I could ask you, Mr. Doyle, while you're with us, about the speech we're going to hear from your Chancellor in about 20 minutes' time or so to the Conservative Party conference, where he's going to announce that long-term unemployed people will have to do full-time community work, like making meals for elderly people or picking up litter or so on, in order to continue claiming job seekers' allowance. How will that help them get a job?
Well, I think it's all about learning the work, the practice of work, isn't it? It's the way of
picking
life.
Picking up litter?
We've all had the experience of walking through a city centre and thinking this would be a more congenial place, it would be a nicer place to be if there was less
litter.
How
would it help somebody who's been unemployed for 3 years or more to get a job?
The answer is, if the alternative is that person finding it difficult to find anything useful to do with their lives, it develops the habit of work. And this is, of course, it's right that what we need to be doing is supporting people into full-time paid employment. But the process of engaging, in particular, young people who've never had the experience of going to work every day, engaging them in the world of work is part of the process of making them a more attractive candidate when there's a vacancy in a local firm.
Thank you very much for talking to us. Stephen Dorrell, Conservative MP and Chair of the Health Select Committee. Let me continue our conversation with Joey Rayner. You began drinking at 12, as you explained, from a decent middle class,
yeah,
if that's accurate, background, because older boys were doing it in the park and so on, and it continued. Tell us how.
During my teenage years, I think I was born with quite a tolerance for alcohol, so I could put quite a lot back, and I thought that was quite cool. So I was drinking as much as the boys that I was hanging out with, you know, despite the fact that they were probably 4 or 5 years older and a lot larger than me in frame. So that kind of went on through my teenage years. And I guess I just, from a social, I was never addicted.
How do you know?
Because I could go a full week and go to school and I was fine. But come Friday night, I would be out getting, you know, really, really drunk. Mm. And I think for me, it just got to a point where, I mean, not great things were happening. There was a lot of arguments. There was a lot of drama. My whole kind of social life was just quite chaotic. But it wasn't until I was in my early 20s that I really started to see the negative effects. I was having blackouts. I was having very bad hangovers. I was actually working as an actress, so I didn't have a 9-to-5 job. And that gave me all the more reason to be able to lie in bed all day. And for me, it got to the point where I really thought, I need to take a break from this. And it was only at that point, when I stopped drinking, that I realised quite how reliant I was socially. And it was really, really difficult. I think it's very easy to preach at people and say, cut back and do that. But it's difficult, it's a challenge to make a shift. If you've been living one way, to go into a social environment and suddenly you've got to find this confidence from within. And it took me a long time. And I'm still, you know, very much working on it. But I can say that my life has improved immeasurably in every respect. And I've got a strong friendship group and we respect and we look after each other. And I can't say that that was necessarily true when I was living very destructively. Yeah.
When you were going through that chaotic social life, as you put it, hangovers and so on and so forth, what were your parents doing or thinking?
Well, I was living in London and I'm from up north, so they were at home. And of course, you know, you don't share everything with them. I've always been up for a good time, and I still am now. I love going out and having fun. I took it too far. I don't think they knew kind of to the extent they do now. Obviously, we've spoken about it, and they're very relieved that I've kind of seen another side. But I think one of the really interesting things is, you know, a lot of young people depend on it for fun. And I think that we've got to, it's all very well talking about the health and all of those issues, and that is so important. But for young people, I think we kind of need to inspire them and show them that actually it can be really fun, and you can have an amazing time if you cut back and drink moderately, you know. And it's about showing the benefits, because we don't do that enough. And I know as a non-drinker, you know, people will say, God, it must be really boring. It's not boring. I have a great time and I have great conversations, more so than when I was drunk, definitely.
What's it like for you if you are out and people around you are drunk and it's 11 o'clock at night and you're the only sober one, but they think they're getting more and more witty and attractive as the evening wears on?
It happens a lot. I guess you get used to it. The funny thing is I'm the first one on the dance floor, because everyone waits till they get drunk to feel confident enough to get up, and I'll be up there at 9 p.m. because it doesn't bother me. You know, it's the same either way. There's definitely a point, I think, for people who don't drink at all, which is extreme, and I'm not recommending sobriety necessarily. I'm all for moderation. And my partner in crime, who runs Addictive Daughter with me, she drinks moderately, and, you know, she was worse than me. And that really works for her. But no, I think that there's definitely a point when you're a non-drinker at the end of a night when you're like, it's probably time to go home now, because it's just not as funny. But, you know, it's a choice at the end of the day, and it's a good choice.